Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fireside Chat. I've lost track of numbers. I'm not even sure. Well, we would know what number this is, actually.
286.
Hi, everyone. And I have two big issues, and then I'm going to take your questions. I'm Dennis Prager, in case that wasn't clear. I should always say that. And this is a tough one because, as many of you know, but not all of you know, Otto died this week. And I have some thoughts on that. By the way, the outpouring of condolences has been very touching to my wife and me. And I thank everyone. And there's really, I'm not asking for others to do so because we understand a lot of people had an attachment. It's so common for people to say to me at airports, "How's Otto?" Sometimes they don't even stop for a selfie. They'll just go say hi to Otto. In that sense, I have to say that dog unwittingly had sort of a bigger effect on a lot of people than almost any human. What was it that somebody just said to me today? Oh, yeah, that was America's dog. That was a nice way of putting it. The truth is, Otto was special. I take this not only from my own perception, but my wife, who's had many more dogs than I have, and anyone really who came in contact. One of our dear friends from Nebraska, who periodically visits, he loved Otto so much. He just, every time he saw him, you go, "This is the perfect dog." It was people's reactions to Otto. It's hard to explain. And I don't want to overdo it, and I'm not overdoing it, because I just saw how people reacted to him. And indeed, many have, of you have. He was a great specimen of English Bulldog, which is a very remarkable breed in and of itself. So I want to reflect on the issue of the loss of a dog. And because that's the way my mind works. I always step back and try to learn lessons about life from whatever happens, good and bad. So I'll begin with this thought. The moment a person adopts or buys a pet, they have set themselves up for pain. And it's a very interesting thing. It's not rationally thought through. Just people do that, and I believe correctly so. But it's a very big lesson to be learned here, that we prefer pain to a, we prefer pain in life to a painless life. People try to avoid pain, and when they do that, they lead a less full life. People don't get married or don't have children if they do get married, and it is to avoid pain. I was just reading a piece, and there's even an acronym now for, I don't remember, couples that have no desire to get married or couples that will never marry. And it made a very rational case. They can travel whenever they want. Couples that will never have children. Sorry. They can travel whenever they want. They can do, and I have addressed this in the past, but it really applies here dramatically and accurately, wherein you get a pet, you know you will have pain. I mean, the chances are overwhelming your pet will die before you do, unless you get it at a very, very old age. And people yet opt to do that. But why don't we apply that to other things? Yes, there is pain in leaving your cocoon and getting married. Marriage may well have some pain in it. And by the way, it may have real pain. You may get divorced. I've never understood, though, in any event, that argument, well, there's so much divorce, I'm not going to get married. Well, there were so many car crashes. Do you avoid driving a car? I think the analogy is actually perfect. Yeah, and not all analogies are that accurate. But you lead a much deeper and richer life if you marry. You lead a much deeper and richer life if you marry and have children. So the question everyone has to ask is, am I out for as little pain as possible, or am I living for as much depth of life as possible? That's why we get a pet. We want that emotional depth, even though we know that within X number of years, we will have the pain of the loss of that pet. It's a very, very important lesson, in my opinion, from adopting an animal. This is Snoopy who's visiting. It's an interesting question, too. Does Snoopy miss Otto? And I haven't been able to figure it out. Maybe it's too soon. This is just a couple of days. And he doesn't realize, or will it, I don't know the answer. Will it dawn on him one day that his brother, whom he really loved, I mean, they would periodically snuggle up together, certainly lick each other's faces. And I don't know that answer. I actually hope he doesn't have any pain from it. Otto died in as ideal or idyllic a manner as almost conceivable. As I said to some people today, when it's my time to go, I hope I go as Otto did. It was painless. It was over a couple of days, so to speak, to say goodbyes. He died with loving company around him and painlessly. It was a tumor, actually, at his heart, and it was just making breathing ultimately impossible. But I did want to reflect on that fact that when we get a pet, we know we're setting ourselves up for pain. Draw the inevitable conclusion. Avoiding pain is not the purpose of life. Purpose of life is to lead a full life, as rich a life as possible. By the way, since I am a big Bible fan, that's what the Garden of Eden story is about. Adam and Eve opted for the pain of life rather than the idyllic non-pain life of the Garden of Eden. They said, we want to live a life with free will, free choice, good and evil, over a life of eternal bliss, innocent bliss, if you will. They chose a full life. They chose a full life over a safe life. They chose a full life over a safe life. Another point that I have frequently made is the God of safety. In fact, I have a jingle on my show. Actually, somebody made it up for me. I suggested it, and then somebody actually put it to music, that the end of the national anthem would be "Better safe than sorry," or "The land of the free, better safe than sorry."
For the land of the free, better safe than sorry.
It's very funny when it's played, but I made that up because that's become the national motto in the United States and perhaps other Western countries. Better safe than sorry. Well, that you may be sorry that you were playing it that safe. I use this example often. I have visited Israel many, many times, over 20 times. And from the beginning of my radio career, people would call in periodically and say, oh, I would love to visit Israel so much, but I'm waiting till it's safe. And as I often note, these people are still waiting 40 years later. What does it mean, you're waiting till it's safe? How safe does it have to be for you to go? And that's a perfect example of not living fully because you rather be safe than sorry. And my motto is, you might end up being very sorry that you played it so safe. That's why during COVID, I knew it was meant well, and I never said anything but thank you to a person who said, be safe. That was the new goodbye. And I never said it to anybody, be safe. It's not a great motto. What does it mean, be safe? And therefore do what? Stay at home all day? Wear a mask all the time? What did that even mean? So I believe in I wear seatbelts. Okay? I think it's irrational not to wear a seatbelt. But I have never played it safe, as it were. I have opted for fullness, and these are some reflections on the demise of a beloved pet. So I have one other thing to address. It won't be nearly as long. Some of you may be, I'm sure that some of you are aware of this because it's made the rounds on the internet. And that is comments that I made at the Daily Wire, one of the Daily Wire sessions on the book of Exodus, the biblical book of Exodus. I was part of the panel with Dr. Jordan Peterson. We did 24 hours, 16 sessions, 24 hours on the book of Exodus. I was delighted and honored to be part of the group that did it. Anyway, and the issue arose of thought sin versus action sin. And I made a comment. I'm paraphrasing. I haven't memorized what I said, but I know my sentiment on this, that in Judaism, the action is way more important than the thought. And I have adopted this view in my own life, that sins of behavior are far worse than sins of thought. And I have to believe that the vast majority of Christians would agree with that as well. But there is a statement attributed to Jesus, Matthew 5, 27 and 28, that a man who looks at a woman with lust is... he has committed adultery with his heart. And I mentioned that I never was able to fully agree with that statement. And I want to reemphasize what many of you know. I'm perhaps the biggest supporter of America's Christians who is not Christian in the country and have been for decades. I think I have brought more people to church than any living Christian, and I'm very proud of that. There's been a real love affair between myself and America's Christians for decades. But obviously, we don't have identical theologies. We have very similar values. But this was the one that always struck me as, did Jesus really mean that? That if you lust after another woman, you have committed adultery with your heart. Well, obviously, he adds with your heart by noting, hey, hello, I know this is not adultery. He wouldn't have added the words with your heart if he thought it was the same thing as adultery. So no Christian should ever think, oh, it's the same thing. Jesus doesn't say it's the same thing. With your heart is not the same thing as with another organ, which I don't need to specify. Nevertheless, I mentioned this during the seminar with Jordan Peterson and this difference. So out of nowhere, it was a perfectly legit question. I'm not saying that he shouldn't have asked it, but truly out of nowhere, because I wasn't even thinking of this issue. He said, oh, well, then what do you think of pornography? And what I thought what my mind was, well, what do you think of a person who is lusting privately, given what you just said? That's what I was thinking. He wasn't asking me, I don't believe, and I certainly didn't take it, what is my general belief about pornography? My general belief about pornography is that in America, it has become horrible, just horrible, that its effect on young people. I'll give you an example of a terrible effect on young people. A young woman I know told me she was on a date, and it was not the first date with this young man, and they were kissing. And then, out of nowhere, he grabbed her neck, in a strangle motion like this. Obviously, he didn't strangle her, nor was his intent to strangle her, but he did this at her neck. And she removed his hand. She was totally puzzled, like, hello, what is that about? And she said to him, I'm just curious, why did you do that? And he said, I thought you would like it. And she thought, why do you think I would like it? And he said, well, because that's what I see on the internet. And that's really a very good example of the deleterious effects of this widespread, ubiquitous porn that exists, especially in its effect on young people who take their cues, or like men take their cues, about what women want and how to behave toward women and what sex is about from the internet. I mean, it's a serious problem. That's clear. But I didn't answer that because I didn't think that that's what Jordan Peterson was asking me, because it would have been a non sequitur. We were talking about thought versus behavior, not porn. So then I said, well, better that he deal with it privately in his fantasy world than have real adultery. And that's what, so people have taken it as if, oh, Dennis Prager is pro-porn. No, I was simply making a division of thought versus deed, which is what I thought Jordan Peterson was asking me about. It's not an issue. You have to understand that I have ever addressed in a positive manner. I have been employed for 24 years by evangelical Christians at the Salem Radio Network. Believe me, they wouldn't have kept me for 24 years if I'd have had anything positive to say about pornography. So I just wanted to make that clear. This is the curse and the blessing of the internet. The blessing is there would be no PragerU. There would be no Fireside Chat without the internet. There are people watching this all over the world. It's a blessing. But it is a curse when 3 minutes out of a whole lifetime get amplified as if this is your view on the subject. And that has happened in some cases with regard to what people think. But I would say this to my religious listeners, especially Christian listeners. I have earned your trust over all these decades. And that's really an important part of this as well. Worthy, by the way, of its own discussion. Have I discussed the moral bank account concept? So that's I think I'm in the black in my moral bank account with religious listeners and supporters of PragerU. So I thought that was important to clarify. Two big subjects, Otto's death and the comments that people saw me make. Okay, it's time. Let me just remind you that you should watch all the Fireside Chats at PragerU. We don't put the whole thing up on YouTube because we fear that one day they will simply take us down because YouTube is owned by Google. Google censors. What was the latest? This was really scary. Oh, yeah. TikTok announced that it will not allow anything on TikTok that disputes anything about the climate change scenario as the governments of the world want you to believe. So even if you just say, yes, there's climate change, but we don't believe it's going to lead to the catastrophes that are predicted by computer models. They won't let you speak, even if you're a scientist. This is very scary, extremely scary. By the way, it benefits China, which owns TikTok totally, because the more the Western world bankrupts itself by not allowing itself to use fossil fuel, natural gas and the like, then China, which is building a coal mine or a coal, whatever, factory. No, that's not the word. Coal what?
Refinery.
No, refinery is for oil. There is another word, I think, for coal. Doesn't matter. They're developing their coal industry at the rate of one whatever it is a week, while the West is bankrupting itself by way, way too rapidly getting off gas. But even what I just said will now not be allowed on TikTok. So anyway, all of this is by way of saying PragerU has fears of saying things that will annoy Google, and we would like you to be able to see all of what we do and get into the regimen of watching us directly at PragerU.com and getting our app. Mm-hmm. All right, time for your questions. By the way, what is our time frame?
Around 20.
Okay. All right, here we go.
Hi, Dennis, and Snoopy and Otto, of course. My name is Adelaide, and I'm a Prager Force member. I'm also currently pursuing a PhD in machine learning at the University of Oxford, and I was curious about your thoughts on the future of academia. Do you think there's still value in getting a degree, especially if you make the distinction between humanities and science, the latter of which I've personally found to be more objective? Thank you so much.
Very intelligent question. Thank you. Whoops. Oh, well, I'm going to have to ask you to do it now. Okay, so there are two issues. First, as to your last comment about the natural sciences, they are being infected by leftism or wokeism, depending what term you wish to use, at a tremendously rapid pace, where medical schools are telling future doctors not to say man or woman or male or female any longer. You don't say a woman giving birth, you say a birthing person. This is what medical schools in America, not all, but many, and I believe soon most, will tell their students. So I am very worried about the natural sciences or STEM, science, technology, engineering and math, as I am about the so-called humanities. And outside of STEM, generally speaking, a college education today is worthless, in my opinion, and is often injurious. I remember one American who was in the administration of one of the presidents. His son was visiting and said to me, I just want you to know I learned more at PragerU than at Princeton. And I do believe that, incidentally. If you watch all of our videos, read the accompanying materials, watch them a few times because they're so filled with information, certainly you will have a better grasp of about what life is. In other words, you will get the most important thing you could get, which is wisdom. It's easy to learn facts. The trick in life is to learn wisdom. So I'm sorry to say that the universities, by and large, in America, and I'm sure elsewhere, but especially in America, have committed suicide. It's a sad thing to say because I love learning. To this day, I can't get rid of an instant respect if I hear someone is a professor. But that's emotional. Intellectually, I assume that the person is not intellectually impressive. Okay. All right, here we go. Melody, Chicago, Illinois. Dennis, not a question, but a comment. I just watched show 282. That's recent. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned you've studied the left and the Soviet Union since school. Another great student was the late great saint Pope John Paul II. By the way, I met John Paul II. We have a picture of me shaking his hand here somewhere. We ought to show it once.
We'll show it.
I was 31 years old, and I met him in the Vatican. When he was a parish priest, parishioners would be surprised to see many books about Marxism. He told them, always know your enemy. Enjoy your fireside chats and PragerU. Melody, Chicago, Illinois. That's right. That's why I studied Russian. I wanted to understand the enemy in the Cold War, the Soviet Union. I didn't learn Russian to read Dostoevsky in Russian. I read Dostoevsky in English. But I wanted to read Pravda, the Soviet communist newspaper. So I agree with you. And I still feel know your enemy. I read the American left as often as I read anything else in America today. Tiffany, 38, Las Vegas. Greetings, Dennis. I know we should pray for our enemies, and I recently decided to go straight to the source. I've started praying for the devil. That's a new one. You got to admit, eh? I never heard that. Did you?
No.
The world in our great country seems to be changing for the worse so quickly, and the list of people behind these changes is rather long and growing. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this. Thank you. Well, it's an interesting question. If you're supposed to pray for your enemy, who's the ultimate enemy? The devil. But what exactly are you praying for him to do? To cease being the devil? So that's what you would have to answer. So it's not something I would do. I would pray, yes, I pray that he fails. But it's in our hands, I believe, whether the devil fails. That's the point. Gabriel, 16, Sugar Hill, Georgia. Mr. Prager, I am fairly familiar with your views on happiness and definitely agree that one should pursue happiness during one's lifetime. However, I was curious as to your opinions on sorrow. That's a deep 16-year-old. Do you believe that modern society could use more sorrow? For reference, I've always viewed sorrow as a deep but calm sadness as opposed to typical depression or grief. Are you sure you're 16? You're not 86? That's pretty damn impressive. Oh, well, it makes sense. Sugar Hill, Georgia. Mm. Kids in Sugar Hill are known.
Definitely.
Known for their wisdom. Where the hell is Sugar Hill, Georgia? Okay, fine.
Obviously.
Okay. Anyway, it's a very intelligent question. Americans, by and large, have had it so good for generations now, since World War II. I think that is part of the problem. And what it has caused is a lot of problematic things. For example, lack of gratitude. Instead of being grateful for a country that has given them so much, opportunity, affluence, security, they just have decided to tear it down. There's an irony there. More people in Poland or Croatia, just I'll use East European examples, appreciate their countries than Americans who appreciate their country. And their countries are a lot poorer. There is truth to your question. Now, that's not an argument for increasing sorrow in the country. Anyway, they are increasing sorrow, the ingrates of the country. But it is an issue. My view has always been, first of all, I've been so incredibly grateful to this country. I know I started traveling abroad when I was 19 years old. I've been abroad every single year of my life except for 2021. I've been to 131 countries. I do keep count, obviously. And I knew how to appreciate this country. I have a motto, not a motto, I have a formula. Secularism plus affluence equals boredom. And that's what has happened in the United States. Secularism plus affluence equals boredom, and boredom leads to mischief. Okay. That's it?
Yeah.
Well, we got a lot in there today.
We did.
About clarifying my comments that have making the rounds about Otto. I was going to say Snoopy. How ironic. By the way, if I didn't make it clear, as it happens, Otto was not put down or euthanized. He went on his own. That's why I said I would like to go like he does in the far distant future, I might add. By the way, he had a far distant future. He lived 3 to 4 years more than the average bulldog, which I credit my wife, who monitored his diet, made sure he walked. And the only credit I take is that I gave him a lot of joy. Maybe I didn't. I get some credit. Give me a break. All right. I don't know exactly but
you brought him the fame that
I brought. Yeah. Which, yes. Unfortunately, I don't know how much it meant to him. I often said the fame never went to his head, but that was sort of like a joke. If Otto knew how famous he was, he wouldn't be Otto.
He became a diva at the end.
He became a diva at the end. No, maybe he was getting. Why wouldn't he? I mean, why wouldn't he sleep here, or, yeah, as he did in the early years? Anyway, everybody, thank you. I'll see you next week. I'm Dennis Prager. Thanks for watching.
Thank you for watching this video. To keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.